I kind of messed up here, guys. Long story short, I recorded this episode, my favourite episode of The Downbeat, the best chat I've ever had with one of the best humans I've ever had the pleasure of making my acquaintance. I recorded it with two separate lapel microphones, and I did some messed up stuff that overwrote my own microphone. So I've used some studio magic to try and level it out. If you can hear past that, then the chat is probably my favourite episode of The Downbeat. Just finished up a tour with Under Oath. Aaron Gillespie and the rest of Under Oath were probably the nicest, most accommodating headliners I've ever had the pleasure of being on tour with. Amazing guys. We have a chat about the tour. We have a chat about his time in Paramore. That rhymed. There's a bunch of stuff. Please don't listen to it on headphones, maybe. Put it on, if you listen to it on a speaker, it sounds pretty good. Anyway, what we've done, what I want to do, right, with certain guests that have a sort of a hobby or something that they liked. Aaron loves NASCAR. I'm doing a shirt. It'll be up, I don't know, until the next episode. We've done a NASCAR Aaron Gillespie shirt on www.thedownbe.at, so it spells downbeat. It'll only be up for maybe, I don't know, 48 hours. I don't know. And what I'm going to do, because no one does this, no one gets paid to do podcasts, I'm going to split the money from the t-shirt with Aaron. And any future guests, if they've got a cool thing they want to do, I might have to do this again because I love this t-shirt. Yeah, that's about it, really. Got a Patreon, and I got a quid. Give us it. Other than that, just ignore the shitty microphones. It will never happen again. I'm an idiot. When I found out that I'd erased one of the mics, which was mine, luckily, Aaron's mic is untouched, I literally cried. It's Aaron Gillespie on the Downbeat podcast.
Downbeat podcast.
The Downbeat podcast.
With Aaron.
With Aaron. Mm-hmm. Famous Aaron.
Mm-hmm.
How
am I famous?
You know what I was thinking last night while I was drunk, and if anyone, you can't see this, but
at the Benz,
I'm using a
liquid IV.
Liquid IV, and I can't stop shaking because I got so fucking hammered last night.
Did you puke, hammered?
No. I'm a grown up. I'm a grown man, but just look at that.
Yeah, that's drunk.
That's fucking...
That's probably... You were drunk until what time?
5.
Yeah, see, that's why you needed to do a proper sleep.
And I didn't. And Here we are with the liquid IV hydration multiplier, thank you. And this is what I was thinking of last night.
Okay.
How... Like, you were, like... Back in the day, I mean, obviously now as well, but, like... You were, like, a super famous drummer. Like... One of the famous guys.
Really?
Yeah. It was Aaron, like, when you were on my note back in the day.
Okay.
I don't want to just talk about drums. I don't really want to talk about drums at all.
We can talk about them some. I think there's things to be talked about, if you want.
Ooh, beef.
No beef.
Like, but then you became, like, a famous drummer guy. Is that just from Under Oath?
I guess. I mean, back when we started, you didn't, like, people weren't making YouTube vids and stuff. Do you know what I mean? I guess maybe...
Is it because you sing as well?
When we started, like, when we started playing, and the band first took off, like, 04 through 06, drum companies before then, so sticks and heads and cymbals and all the bullshit, they were doing, like, Dave Weckl and Carter Buford, and there wasn't a ton of rock guys. There were some, but they were huge bands. You know what I mean? So... I feel like I was maybe one of the first guys that, like, was on a Mino Box that wasn't from, like, a huge band. It was from, like, a quotation fingers sing band or whatever. Maybe that's why. Or maybe it's the singing.
Well, it was, like, it was weird because it was only you from
that, I don't know.
That scene. I can't think of another band. Not that Under Oath wasn't massive, but another band that was, like you said, not a fucking huge,
there were way bigger bands at the time, though. Like, at the time, we were touring with Taking Back Sunday and My Chem. And the Used, who were way bigger at the time. You know, all of those bands were fucking huge.
I couldn't name you one of those drummers.
And I don't know. I and it makes me feel funny to talk about sometimes because I don't think I have the... And we've talked about this in the last 6 weeks. I don't think I have the fucking juice to be the guy on the box as a player.
You are. You are the most... I'll preface this whole thing. You're the most welcoming... band ever toured with, and I was like a sweet. Little bit apprehensive. Not even apprehensive, just like, I wonder if Aaron's going to be a dick. And you are the complete opposite.
I tried to preface.
Literally the nicest person I've ever talked with.
I tried to preface, like, by becoming online friends with you because I'm such a fan of, and this sounds dumb, but I'm such a fan of the podcast and of the streams and stuff, the Downbeat brand, because I think that, and we can get into this later, but I like that it's not a drummer's thing. Even though you're a drummer and you film yourself playing drums, you're like kind of making fun of yourself for being a drummer all the time.
That's it.
Do you know what I mean?
That's it.
And I feel like today in the drum world, people are so serious, yeah. You know, and you have all the bullshit. I'm not going to, you know, people that are listening to this have seen you. You have all the cameras and you have the light, but you're sort of taking the piss out of yourself. And so when I hadn't met you, I'd met the rest of the band, and I'm such a fan of the band, but I was like, this guy is one of my people. You know what I mean? Drummers who, you play so well every night and you take it seriously, but you're not like, I'm afraid of getting in trouble for the things that I want to say because I've never done a drummer podcast, but.
It's not a drummer podcast.
I know.
Your whole conversation you're having right now is telling me that it's not a drummer.
I know, but you know what I mean though. Like drummers listen to this and a ton of non-drummers do, but like, I feel like, and dude, there's so many talented fucking people playing drums on YouTube. So let me preface all of it with saying that. But I feel sometimes like it's a little bit like jerking off on camera. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's performative.
Yeah.
And for me, like, sex is always better than beating off.
I'm exactly the same.
Do you know what I mean? So when you do it live.
Do you want to know a side note?
Go on.
Just to keep it on the Downbeat brand. I think I've jerked off 3 times in the last 2 years. Which is crazy.
You're just that good looking. Fucking hell, dude.
When I stopped, I was like, just fuck it more.
I mean, yeah. So and I'm using that as a drum analogy. Where when you play drums in front of people, that's the release. And this is no slight to you, because I've watched all your drum videos and you're so talented, but you're better out there as a player.
Because, but Evan, he is, thank you.
You might not think you are. Because I've heard you say shit in the last 6 weeks, but I do think that you're better out there.
But that is because, thank you, but that's also because of the exact you saying this is one of my people is because, imagine if I was doing, you know, when I play the shows here and I get into it and I fucking, you do as well, I stand up and fucking punch stuff or whatever. Imagine if I was doing that on Instagram, like, just
that's what I'm fucking saying. People do though.
Yeah, and it's
and like, that's where I'm like, that sucks though.
Yeah.
Because when I watch you play, you don't play with half the intensity you do in front of the light as you do.
Because it would be like jerking off. Literally, exactly.
So why do you think that drummers do it then?
Because it does make you a name. It's honestly even like endorsements now. From a business point of view, it actually makes much, much more sense for a company to give some guy on the internet symbols.
True.
Than a guy that's touring, because the amount of people, like, let's say there's 2,000 people here tonight, the percentage of them that are drummers, let's say maybe that's fucking 2%.
Or they're off their heads drunk and they're not going to remember what they saw
or
whatever.
They can't see your symbols or whatever.
Got it.
Versus on the internet, overhead shot, there's the symbols. 20,000 people see it and 19,000 of them are the drummers. So I get it from a business point of view, but I also get, like, it isn't cool.
Well, don't get me wrong, if Zildjian approaches me, they did with the Sweet Ride line in 2018 or 2019, I did all those videos. If someone of them approached me and were like, hey, we're making this new shit, like, we want you to do, I would do it. But I'm talking about of my own volition. I don't think that I would ever make videos, which I think has injured me, though. It's because you started this by saying you were like famous as a drummer, and that has died in some ways, in many ways. But here's why. Let me tell you why. Because the companies that endorse me, who I'm so grateful for, Gretsch and Remo and Vic Firth and Zildjian, they don't even approach me anymore because they know I'm not going to make my own content. You see what I'm saying? Yeah. And from it, I can't be bothered to do it. You know what I mean?
I get that. It's like the same. Like, I don't really make any drum content when I'm on tour because I can't be bothered either.
Right.
It's more of a, like, it gets me work when I'm at home. by putting the clips up.
Well, I asked you the other day, as a songwriter, that's the bulk of my life, I asked you if you'd be interested when you get home to play on shit. But the only way I knew that is from watching you.
From watching my shit.
So it's like... it is a thing.
It's a thing, and actually you probably nailed it on the head. Like, I try... What's this, a fucking you interviewing me podcast?
Come on, dude, this is great. People want this. This is the shit they want.
They do. I like try and be self-aware of how uncool stuff can look, while at the same time putting it out there so people do offer me stuff.
But I think it helps. So I have this thing like with bands. So like, Why did we have Straight From The Path on the tour? This big sold out tour we just both did.
Which is the best tour we've ever done, by the way.
Cheers. But why did we do it? Aside from the reason I love the music, I listen to Straight From The Path in the gym all the time. And I have for a long time, but why did we bring you guys on the tour? And I think this is I'm going to tell you the quick answer, is because you don't take yourself too seriously. You see what I mean? Like, as a band, the music is real serious when you're on stage.
Yeah.
It's fucking heavy, and there's only two amps, and it's I love the whole aesthetic, but like, if you put a gun to my head and said, why is Straight From The Path on this tour, and I would tell you this answer, I would say, because you don't take yourself seriously. You take yourself seriously musically, but as a persona, and I'd like to say the same for Under Oath. It's very serious.
That's why we get on.
But no one is like, I need my hour before the show. Don't talk to me afterwards. You see what I'm saying? And I think that you've done that as a streamer with drums. So it feels there's pro mics, it's the fucking thing, or whatever. But no one's like, this dude, if his camera feed goes out, will probably still post it with like the blurry line or whatever.
I like putting mistakes on it.
I've seen you mess up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's interesting that like, I think that helps the younger generation, because this is very dad of me, I have two kids, but like, if I were to make content, I would want to help those young kids,
exactly.
You know, that buy the cymbal box. Like, how can I turn you on to some cool shit and teach you to, like, play your ass off, but also, like, if you have 4 or 5 beers before the show, that's okay, too.
It's fucking awesome.
It's great. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, that's the deal. Like, yesterday I posted a picture of our guitar player has a new brewery that we're actually going to go to after this, but I posted a pic. I had never
seen it. King State,
the new brewery is called The Brutalist.
Lovely beer.
You've had one. Lovely.
Amazing.
So I had one of those beers. I had never had one. You had one before me. It's called a reverse order. And it's like this insane. And I posted a picture of it, and I said, this is the best beer. Which, I love it, because it's my homie, and it is delicious. But you say things like that. Like, that's the best.
Yeah.
And all these people just fucked me up on the IMs.
Are you kidding me?
Like, that's not the best beer. Come to New Jersey, and I'm like,
you can have my Pappy's fucking
corn
beer.
It was the whole thing, and I'm like, I was just posting this because the place is cool, and I'm like chilling on my Instagram. And I think if more people in like the online space, the drum space, if it felt more like that, like this is the best solo, but there's a mistake in it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I would turn people on, I think, and I think that you're doing it, and you're the only drummer that I watch online. Because, but I think that's the fucking thing, right? Like, how do we help the next people come out here and get tours? You're a great drummer, but you got tours and jobs because you're cool. See what I'm saying?
I like it. I like how much you're gassing me up.
Yeah.
But while we're on the, like, helping the young generation thing, that's the whole reason I'm like, let's show mistakes and also call out the people that are fucking faking shit, because, like, It's the equivalent of airbrushing, like models. Or pulling the waist in so it's like a woman
bigger titties
like
or
that,
whatever,
bigger boobs, like crazy, insane ratios that don't exist. And then there's girls looking at that, aspiring to be that, will never be that, and then they get depressed and they get problems. The same thing when you've got like 300 BPM blast beats, completely edited to the grid.
Mm.
And then people are like, that's amazing, I'll never be like that. And I would get bummed with it. So my initial first videos were all, like, I would edit them.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would have insane imposter syndrome because I would...
After you posted them?
Yeah, because people...
Oh, wow.
People would comment and go... This is, like, 5 years ago. People would comment and go, oh, my God, that's amazing. And I could never take the compliment because in my head I'd go, I gritted that. Like, I know I gritted.
You can't fucking sleep at night. You're like, I... Yeah.
And then I was just like... I think I did one video, and then I was like, oh, that's actually pretty good. I'm not going to edit it. And then I was like, oh, I'm never editing again. Because then every compliment you get is like, actually, fuck, yeah, I did that. And if you feel bad about yourself, you can go back through the videos and be like, oh, actually, I'm pretty good. But I could never do that before.
Huh.
You've never edited anything in your life?
Yeah, I mean, full disclosure, like, we do some light editing on records. But if we want something to sound like, Craig has just put his wallet on the table that's in between us, and he's got $1 million in it.
No, I don't.
It's like 8 inches thick.
Costanza.
It's all like fucking like torn dollars and stuff.
Don't shame me. There is quite a lot of money in there.
My favorite thing is that you were at the bar last night and you paid, and you were so drunk you couldn't get the money properly back into your wallet. That's what that is.
Success thing. Oh my god, what was I doing?
It's like all fucking twisted in half. So bad.
There's a lot of singles in there.
Oh, you didn't go to the bands, did you? You went somewhere else.
I did not, actually. So that's why I'm confused. That's a 20? That's pretty good.
Folded in three pieces. This is audio only. I'm going to help you out.
Have you seen the episode of Curb when he's got that 50? Yeah. And he keeps in his shoe.
Oh, so full disclosure. We do edit things if we want them to be like, if there's like a heavy part where Chris is playing like a heavy electronic part, but for the most part, when we do edit, it's to, like, we use Pro Tools, and no one edits but ourselves if we're editing on record. Like, we don't let like a producer do it. So this last record, I think we edited some stuff to like 16%. So it's very swung, you know?
So is that like the Pro Tools when you can affect when it...
Yeah, it's called Beat Detective, so it'll like, it recognizes the regions and it'll make the cuts for you. That's how a lot of people...
There's a slider that you...
You can go from 0 to 100.
Oh, I've never done it on 100.
Yeah. No, me neither, I don't.
Yeah.
But a lot of stuff now is, though.
Oh, fucking...
And what fucking scares me, we might have had this conversation in the last month or two, but like, people expect to hear that now. You know,
yeah.
Voyeurist, which came out June of this year.
Thank you for doing my job.
Yeah, there we go. people like... ate our lunch about it. I don't like the way it sounds.
What? It sounds fucking amazing.
You think that, but like the modern ear.
Oh, because they want the gridded.
We didn't grid it, and we didn't rip sound replace. Kick, snare, nothing. It's just in there.
Whole album.
Whole album.
That's fucking
sick. One song might have a snare sample as like an effect.
We had this chat, but it's like this. The annoyance of becoming a competent drummer is that when you again go into the studio, you have to work far harder than actually people who are bad at drums, because the producer knows it's in you. So like the same thing, on our record there are two sections with a snare sample on it.
Yeah.
And the rest of it is 100% fucking natural.
I know. You can tell. I mean...
But it's like the... It's because Will Putney knew that it was in me.
So he ate your lunch.
Yeah, he was like, I need that snare drum 10% louder.
Same.
Every single thing. And I can hear on your record.
We self-produced, so we didn't have a producer. So I have Tim yelling at me and JJ yelling at me. Like, the third hit on the first verse is lighter than the... And then you have to just get back in there.
But if you were just bad, that could just be sampled.
Right. It's the same thing with, like, vocalists, right? Or, like, the way that people look. Like, you were talking about people being airbrushed. Like, we are trained... If you listen to the Beatles now, it's crazy.
Yeah.
How, like, not on key it is.
Yeah.
Like, the vocals. And they've got these gorgeous, lush harmonies. It's the four of them, right? Like, you listen to it, and it's amazing. But if you listen to it against, like, the newest rock band with 18 made from Melodyne harmonies, you're like, this doesn't sound as good as that.
Yeah, I feel like that's when it's way out. I feel like people are getting... It's almost like... You know, there's a word for it. I can't remember what it's called. When... Ah, fuck. If I knew the word, I'd be a good podcaster. When someone's face looks just wrong. So, did you see The Irishman?
Yes.
You know how when they age-enhanced it or whatever, there's a word for the way a human being looks,
okay,
and it's not actually human.
Okay.
And I feel like people are getting to that stage with music, where they're like, I don't like this and I don't know why, and it's because the humanity has just been completely sucked out of it. And I think we're coming back to stuff being a little bit off key, and people are going to be interested by that because everything is going to sound fucking grey sludge like each other. I came to this realization in my bunk on mushrooms the other day. I was listening to, like, music, and I could hear insincerity like it wasn't an instrument, like it was an instrument.
Wow.
And I was going through music that I liked.
A track of fake.
And I could hear, like, if drums were sampled or whatever, I could hear, like, I'm not hearing the moment that the music was made. And it was crazy. And it was like, I didn't take enough to trip. But I was, and I was in a legal state or whatever I have to say. I had, my phone screen looked like 8K. And I had this extra ability to hear insincerity. And I broke the fucking rules of not listening to the bands you're on tour with when you're on tour to do Voyeurist.
Oh.
But I haven't told you this because I was saving this for
I love the saving.
So I did Voyeurist and I fucking was like, it got to like Hallelujah and I was like, gonna cry.
There's mistakes. I'm sure you could hear them.
No, I was fucking tripping, bro. It was like an organic sound.
Yeah, thank you.
And it was,
that's the best compliment I've ever been given about it. There's electronic shit, though. This is a pro podcast movie. You ready for this?
Yes.
There's electronic shit, though, that's very real, too. Nine Inch Nails.
Yeah.
Who's one of our both of our favorites. Like, but there's, like, my personal favorite. You see how that move? I'd move that.
This is, you should have a podcast.
I'm so good at this.
This is perfect.
But I told you a few nights ago about how my favorite is With Teeth. And I think my favorite is With Teeth because there's a lot of really shiny shit on With Teeth. You know, in production, you know, synths and computer moves, but the drums are totally real.
Yeah.
Dave Grohl played drums on a lot of that.
Really? And yes. Josh Frakes.
Yes.
Two of those.
Yeah.
What a fucking.
I don't know who played on what songs. I looked it up once, but like you can hear, like the real drums mixed with other stuff. So I think that may become the modern sweet spot.
Yeah.
Is like, and if you listen to like. Head Like a Hole, for instance, like from Back.
That's one of my favorite Nine Inch Nails.
It's so electronic, but there's some like.
It feels like it was played, like.
Yes.
Samples, but played. All the fucking Typo Negative albums.
Same thing.
Yeah.
Just, Fear Factory from like the 90s.
Yeah.
Like.
Just like super triggered, sampled, Oasis, fucking whatever, but somebody actually fucking played it in.
So it's not quantized perfectly. I was listening to. I woke up to pee the other night. I have this fucking thing. I don't know what's going on tour. I'm 38, full disclosure, so as I get older.
It's a prostate thing coming.
Dude, I wake up once a night at home to piss. Every night, without fail.
It's a prostate.
But if I've had a lot to drink, it's a nightmare.
But that's normal.
But on the bus, it sucks, because you're moving.
Oh, I hate it.
And we have a crew of guys on our bus that drink till the wee hours every night. They are Tim. Our guitar tech, JJ, our front of house guy, who also engineered our record, and usually my drum tech, Daniel, they up till 4 or 5 in the morning drinking. Every night, I don't know how they do it, but they do it. So every night when you go pee at 4:30 in the morning, they're out there just like.
And you have to fucking.
They look like raccoons with a flashlight on them. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
The lights are always off. So I woke up, this was 2 nights ago, and they've been watching like live streams from quarantine from other bands. So like there was a Bon Iver one that was insane that I walked in on. He was like playing in a fucking alley.
Oh, I've seen that.
In New York. But I walked in on one literally between Atlanta and here. And we had been drinking that night, so I was up. You know, it's 4:30. And I hear this like like R&B kind of thing, but it's weird sounding. And I open the door and they're watching a live stream and it's like 6 guys in a room around a table. And on the table, there's fucking beer and people rolling joints, and they're all playing music together. And it's this guy named Dijon, the Mustard. And I'm watching it, and I'm kind of drunk still, and I'm watching it, and he has no microphone. And then he bends over, and I see he has a lav mic on, like we have now.
This is what he was just talking about.
And so the band is playing in a room with no in-ears, and there's samplers, like the drummer has in-ears, and like towels on the drums. But I feel like. It was so real, and it was the most inspiring thing I've ever seen. It made me feel like Nine Inch Nails made me feel when I was younger, where it was like digital, but like, dude, it was so, so exciting.
Dirty, like.
Yeah, and he was singing in the room like this. That was the vocal. And then I went and listened to the record, and it's the same way. Like, there's no close mic. So I think you're right. Maybe there's like a cyclical thing where we're coming and back to that, where you can make stuff. I'm gonna try to find the name of the record. Dijon, like the mustard. And that album is called Absolutely. And it came out last year. And
someone showed me that video before. I didn't realize it was.
The song I'm talking about is called Big Mics. And I do.
And ironically, it's Little Mics.
No mics. But yeah, dude, I think everything's cyclical in music, right? And I've never said this either. This, I might get in trouble. I don't care. We're good. But like, I feel like we're almost in the last 10 years. We've been back in the 80s. And we're like waiting on Nirvana.
That's literally it.
Do you know in the 80s, like, you had like Poison and Rat and all the bullshit, Hair, and everyone singing as high as they possibly could. And then you had Guns N' Roses, who kind of dipped their toes into like some real shit.
And then the real shit.
And then Nirvana and Pearl Jam came along and took away the hair and the high singing and just made music. And I feel like in the last 10 years, even 15 years inside of the scene, like I felt like after when our band walked away, like every band I heard, it was like so, like the vocals were like, ah! It was like higher than anything, inhuman, you know, with like the made harmonies, like inhuman. And I feel like we're still kind of waiting on Nirvana in many ways. And I think that it's going to come in a different shape than we even think.
Then it won't be Nirvana.
It might not be guitars. I mean, it might be Billie Eilish, you know? I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, it might be Big Sean or Kendrick Lamar or who the fuck ever, you know what I mean?
Like, I mean, that's one thing with like Kendrick that I just fucking love, is that's taking what we're talking about, almost like the, obviously don't sound anything like Nine Inch Nails, but like the digital with the live shit into that world is fucking awesome. Even like with Dre albums is real shit, but it doesn't feel as
good
as Kendrick in terms of like instruments and shit.
My favorite thing to talk about is like what's gonna happen, like with music, and what's gonna happen with like art, and like how it's gonna translate to people's lives, and it's all speculation.
I can't see. So here's like an example. I can't see Architects coming out with a raw sounding record. They would get murdered because no one would like it.
You think so?
Because their fans want the digital fucking snare drum super sampled.
Here's a bigger one. What if Bring Me did?
I feel like Bring Me could get away with anything right now.
Think so?
They could get away with murder. They've already went from
being a metalcore
one
band
genre to something else, so they could actually just do it again. But I feel like Architects one of my favorite bands. Their fans are the fucking worst. They are, dude, no offense, because you're all listening. They are just so like. I remember when Sam cut his hair and there
was
like
it's like that
uprising. Then there was like an album that didn't sound as quite as sampled, and everyone fucking shit about it.
Wow.
So I feel like they they've sort of made their grave of.
They're the realest motherfuckers, though, dude. My Architect story, which I have never told. In 2010, I had like a essentially mental breakdown. To just bring it in real serious on the downbeat. But I had essentially a mental breakdown. It was like drinking with pills, and it was bad. Like sleeping 18 hours a day and then waking up for the gig. And I quit under oath in Europe, in Prague. And Architects were direct support. And Sam, basically, I don't know why this happened, but Sam essentially rode on her bus for a month. The rest of the band, I don't know where they were. Like, the best guys, Tom Searle back then, rest in peace, like coolest motherfuckers, dude. Like, but Sam, for some reason, would roll cigarettes at night, and we'd stay up to 4 a.m, and I would just be off my head. Like, I got a Xanax prescription, and I was drinking on it, which you shouldn't.
I've been there as well.
Because I was so miserable in life, and my first marriage was failing, and I was just trying to erase shit. And Sam, it was crazy. I quit the band, and like it was public, like on the tour. It was so strange. Usually something like that, you know, on a tour this size. Yeah. Both of our bands were quite small 12 years ago, whatever. It was 2010, so 12 years ago now. Like now you'd shut the door and like it'd be a big thing. But it was like public. And I'll never forget Sam just being like, it's going to be okay, dude. Like they were the realest people. And at the time, like Tom Searle And the other guitar player, I can't remember his name. Different guy than is in the band now. You remember that guy?
Tim.
Yeah. They were super into like that band Isis, a Panopticon record. They were super into Botch, who is a band that we love. And they were into all the realest shit. And they can really play. So I find it interesting with how real they are humanly that they have to like hold up this, plastic is the wrong word, but like this, they have to make a certain type of music, like you just said, for their fans to be like, this is fucking dope, because they're the realest dude. I cried in Sam's arms.
Like I've done that many times. Sam is my motherfucker.
Like he's the realest dude.
We just talk to each other. We're best friends. We can not talk to each other for 2 weeks, and then one of us is going through some shit, and then it's just like, hey.
Pick it up.
Yeah,
it's fucking I mean, and they were there. Like, I played my final 5 shows with Under Oath with those dudes there until 2016. Like, yeah, almost 7 years. Like, and they were just there. Like, and it wasn't weird. They were just like, yeah, this sucks, dude. Like, so I find that interesting. People socially are like so real, and then they have to do a certain thing to keep their business up.
Yeah, I don't
getting serious on the downbeat today, everyone.
I mean, super serious. I don't think musically Architects do anything to please anyone, but I think just the production.
That's what I mean. I don't mean like they're writing songs for their fans. I more mean like,
yeah, I don't think they could sway from the production. Although, hang on, I don't think the world's ready for it, because here you go, this is what I'm going to throw at you. Deftones Gore.
People hated it.
There were some bangers on it, but
yeah,
it was too raw.
It was too So we're the ones in here like preaching raw, and I don't like it either.
I like three songs on it.
Yeah.
And then even like fucking Gojira. The last two Gojira records are more raw, but I fucking like the other ones. Okay. I take back everything I said.
Yeah, we're both full of shit. It's funny though, dude, because like you can say one thing and I think we're both duped by the 80s. Like we both want to hear that, even though like stylistically and in ethos, we want to make the real shit.
Yeah, but I also want the real shit to be that fucking flam at the start of Misery Business. I want every drum to sound like that.
And that's David Bendeth, and that shit is very doctored.
That is a fucking big sample.
He mixed Lost in the Sound of Separation, which is arguably my favorite Under Oath record. And there's a lot of stuff on that that is sampled. You know what I mean?
Sounds sick. So I take everything.
No.
Maybe the mushroom thing was real though, because maybe it's just a player, and it doesn't matter what the, as long as you can play it. I don't know.
I think you're right. I have a friend who is like he passed away last year. He is he's like a big guitar tech, and he worked with like Alison Krauss and Mike Campbell, who plays guitar for the Heartbreakers. And he said that he was in a studio and John Mayer's rig was there, and he picked it up, and you know what, it's like fully like he was like fully like fucking up, like it was shit, they were done for the night, and he like snuck in there and grabbed John Mayer's like 50s Telecaster through these amps called Dumbles that are so rare, they're over $100,000 a piece, and there was three of them, it's all hooked together, and he said he strummed it and it sounded like shit. He was like, it was fucking nasty sounding, and he said later that night, they all got there for the session, and it was the best guitar he'd ever heard. So I think it's about the hands. I really do. Especially with drums and like tactile instruments, guitars. And even like you said, people making shit with samples. Like, it's about the person. You know what I mean?
The person is a fucking great quote, and I don't want to butcher it, so I'm going to get the quote right now.
That's what it is with art, right? It's about the person. Like I said, here's a good example. You were gone somewhere, and the pigeon had set up your drums. And I wanted to hit. I've never played an aluminum drum kit. They're aluminum, right? The Tamas you have out? Or are they steel?
They are steel.
So, and when you play them at night, they sound so fucking good. And I sat down and played them. I was like, they don't sound that good.
I felt like that on your kit today. Yeah. How weird is that?
Isn't that strange?
It's like the connection to the
it's the person.
Here's the quote. Miles Davis. Anybody can play. The note is only 20%. The attitude of the motherfucker who plays it is 80%.
And I think that's what's missing in music today. I really believe that.
More motherfuckers.
More motherfuckers. No, but like everything is so digitized. Like when you had your fucking shroom trip in the bunk the other night in Illegal State. He got
Illegal State. And guess what? My bunk was huge. It was crazy. I was in there and I was like, this thing is big. How can fit a family of four in here?
Yeah, but like we've digitized people out. You know when you're playing a show or you're like in a studio session and you know it's really you and you're like in a box of the song.
Yeah.
Like you're in it. Yeah. It's like your bunk. You're in the bunk of the song and it's 360.
You want to do mushrooms now?
I've never done mushrooms.
I've been, well,
I have crippling anxiety.
Why?
And you do it?
I take a tiny little amount. And then what happens, this is what happened to me on this tour, and I did want to talk about this on the podcast, but I didn't think it would be on this episode. I have diagnosed anxiety and diagnosed depression.
Do you take pills for it?
Yeah, but like as and when.
You don't take a daily, like a daily antidepressant?
I did for the longest time, okay. And then I
stopped.
Come back on and back off.
Got it. Okay.
Meltdowns. But when I did shrooms the other day, the same time, I think my anxiety comes from a really bad fucking trip I had when I was a kid.
Like, trauma thing.
Like a fucking, had a horrible fucking trip. And I feel like my anxiety came from there. So when I was doing the mushrooms the other day, I caught myself getting into an anxious loop. And at the time, I caught myself doing it. And in my head, I could visualize what just triggered it. And why it wasn't actually a problem, and it's just my cyclical thinking that made me do it. And then it's like I visualized.
It helped you.
I visualized the like connector in my brain, and then just moved it. And I haven't been anxious since then. Like I've got Valium prescription. I haven't taken it.
Wow.
Since this one fucking mushroom trip. And I like in my head, I'm like, man, like if they made the problem, then a smaller dose might fix the problem. But it was crazy. Like just the way it makes you think, it's like fucking terrible.
I don't know about it in the UK, but there's a company here in the States called Silo.
Yeah, the ones I have.
Yeah.
Not here in this illegal state, but in a legal state, they're the ones.
So there's companies that are doing it now where you can, it's posted.
It's gummies.
So I take an antidepressant every day. And I have for, I'm 38, almost 20 years. And I would love to get off of it, and I tried to wean my way off of it in 2018 in Australia. Like
that's a bad
one. Oh, I know, but I called a doctor, and was like, I called my doctor, and I was like, how do I do this? And he gave me the schedule, like you cut one in half.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget it. By the time I got to the end, it was like a 2-week thing. We were in Australia for 3 weeks. I would look in the mirror, and I couldn't believe, I don't know if you understand this, but I couldn't believe that I was myself. Like I looked at myself in the mirror, and I looked like another person to myself.
Yeah.
I was so fucked up mentally. So if you can do something natural and it uncovers that trauma or helps you with that cognitive thinking of like, I see why I'm anxious,
yeah,
and I see the path on how to erase it. Here in the States, they're doing DMT treatment now, ketamine.
I mean, that's why they need to like decriminalize it so they can actually research it, because it might be that this is not helping anyone and that the antidepressants would help people more. Like, but they need to test it, because otherwise, like even me saying this on this podcast, I would go down and say the reason I'm so fucking anxious and depressed is previously from doing too many drugs. So drugs probably aren't the answer, but they might be. And I wouldn't fucking, they just need more research.
Drugs done the right way though is
awesome.
It's totally different. Yeah, it's totally different. Like, you know what I mean? Like when you drink on Xanax, that was my drug of choice. Xanax, I loved it.
I had it for anxiety, and just the blackout is dangerous.
It's so scary, but it's bliss when you're miserable, which is such a heavy thing. It's such a heavy thing to talk about. But if you can make someone, because and why is it bliss when you black out? Because you forget why you hurt. You know what I mean? And you go away, which is so dangerous. But like, if there was a way to synthesize a tenth of that feeling, to where you could go into life and be like, I don't care about like what's happened to me. I was going through, about to go through a divorce at the time, which is why I was so miserable. Hey, let's go. But like, I think if you could have a tenth of like us drinking on 3 bars of Xanax, like just a bit to make you go, life is hard, but today, right now.
I feel like I was like you with the anxiety about the mushrooms, and I just did the smallest amount, and it was sick.
Full disclosure, on this tour, someone brought mushrooms around. I don't know who had it. And they were like, do you want like a little cap? And for a second, because I had been reading about this therapeutic psilocybin therapy, I was like, but I was pretty drunk, so I was like scared to like blend the two.
I was drunk as fuck.
Really? See, I've read that if you mix the two, you like see like a dragon coming out of Jesus' butt. Or like
it was wonderful.
Something crazy. I don't know, man. I think that like I grew up really, really, I don't know if you know this about me, but I grew up really, really, really religious.
I have heard.
Like hyper religious, and I'm not religious.
You personally or family?
Me personally as well.
Okay.
Until I was like,
let's do this. This is a fucking heavy episode. Let's do this.
I'm really sorry. I know it's supposed to be funny.
It's funny.
But until I like made Christian music and stuff until I was like 28, 29 years old. And then when my divorce happened, all those people kind of walked away from me. Because it's not sexy in the Christian world. It's about like how hot your wife is and how good everything is. And I was in like the commercial Christian world, like big playing at Hillsong and stuff. Yeah. It's been almost 10 years now, but I realized in it all that it was man-made, a lot of it. And I have spiritual beliefs, but I don't consider myself religious.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think I have a lot of trauma from that. I think that's where a lot of my stuff is seated. Because I grew up like, and I have a wonderful, my mom was here tonight. She's incredible. But I grew up really, 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 really sheltered. So I have this in the very back of my mind, like, I think everything should be permissible. Like, I think with drugs, if it helps you, and it's, and I'm not saying go do heroin, but I'm saying if it's dosed and it's right, and a doctor did it, like the silo stuff or all this stuff that's out right now, you should try it. But I have this bend way in the back of my mind where it's like, I don't know if I can, is that okay? Like, I never got drunk in high school or anything. You know what I mean? I didn't get drunk until I was of age, and then I felt bad about it for years.
Yeah, that's...
Because I have this...
A Christian,
it's sewn into me, and I'm almost 40, over a decade removed, but I still have like these bends that like don't let me do stuff sometimes.
You are. Listen, I don't want to be a mushroom DMT podcast guy, but I kind of am now.
Okay,
so,
Downbeat is rebranded.
Rebranded the Downbeat experience. Sounds like you just need a little couple.
Yeah,
just a couple of those gummies.
Couple
that may or may not have.
in my podcasting kit.
That Pelican goes next to my antidepressants as well, if anything goes wrong.
No, dude, I just think that, like, I don't know. I think people like you and me, like, you think too much, you go through stuff, and you internalize it. I heard someone say once, like, if you get like in a squat position, which you love to squat, bro. If you get in a squat position, there's two types of people. If I push you over, you're either just going to fall with it and be like, whatever, that guy pushed me over, I got weight in my hand, which is what you should do. That's how you get, that's how you don't injure yourself. You should just roll with the punches. And then there's people like you and I, we get in the squat position, someone pushes us, I'm going to try to get my back foot to protect myself from falling.
And then
eat their ass. So, like, do you know what I mean? Like, we're those type of people, and I think that kind of stuff is, like, could be beneficial. So I'm on that journey now, trying to figure out, like, can you do it?
You want to speak? Let's not make it an ad, but they did send me shitloads of stuff for free. Speak to the silo people. Just send them a DM.
So they're in the UK as well?
No.
Are we? Are you gonna get arrested on the plane?
I don't think so.
They're gonna search Craig Reynolds' asshole.
I have to get rid of everything tonight.
You should just eat it all before the show and see what turns up. Sold out gig.
We're in an illegal state. Whatever. Fuck off. I don't care.
Wow, dude. Yeah. They hook you. You get more swag than anyone I know. It's because you're so fucking good looking.
Shut up. I had something to say on the what you're saying about having the worry in the back of your mind, the way, the sort of people that we are, and you're right, people who are on antidepressants, do you think you would be as successful if you didn't think like that?
Whoa. So, me and Tim had this drunken conversation the other night. He's like, we've all known each other for 20 years in our band, so the way that we talk to each other is sometimes really backdoor. Like, you think you're fucking Sylvia Plath because you're a mental case, right? And that's why you're so artistic. What he really means to ask me is what you asked me.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I don't know any well-adjusted musicians who are successful.
Yeah.
So
making good music.
That's the thing, is I think that, I mean, I'm a writer too. I'm not just a drummer, right? Like, I write songs for other people as a day job, and I have never written a happy song, and I struggle with it. Like, I go to Nashville 3 or 4 months a year, and a lot of the music I write is modern country music. and it's like beer and trucks and hot chicks, and I really struggle with that stuff sometimes because I don't really write when I'm happy. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I can't. I get most of my best work done when I'm in the throes of the...
Like when you go on stage at night, there's a tinge of like anger, right? Mm. Or a tinge of angst. Like I don't typically... Maybe at the end of a set I'm smiling and we're drinking beer on stage and it's fun. But like for the first five songs, I am here to tear your soul apart.
First track, you go fucking...
You know what I mean?
Off the bat.
Yeah. And it's because...
If I do that, I fuck up. But
it's because I'm a little bit worried. Though I'm a little worried, like, can I pull it off? Like, is my heart gonna explode? I have those thoughts every night.
I think about, like, because I honestly think I would never, everyone's like, oh, would you ever change anything about anything? Like, even divorce, even any of this
right.
shit, I wouldn't change anything at all.
Right.
Or if you could change anything about yourself, like, would you get rid of any of your, like, fucking mental illness or something? And it's like, I don't think I would, because
it wouldn't be as good.
It leads me to make the decisions that make me who I am and where I am.
I just look at like people who flex or whatever, you know, like, and I don't know that it's all like this, but I look at people in bands or pop artists and I'm like, that's an act, but that's all a cover up for something else. You know what I mean? The very few let you in, like Halsey lets you in and you see like, she tells stories about her life or like growing up at 16 and men being like dirty to her and like.
She works with fucking Nine Inch Nails.
Dude, that record is incredible.
Amazing.
Oh my God. I wish that, never mind. Like, I wish I could be a fly on the wall and just watch, like, how Trent and Atticus dealt with a pop star.
Trent's number one on my, like... he's number two on my I Want You on the Downbeat list.
I bet he's an asshole.
Do you think...
I don't know. I don't know anything. So, I'm friends with Alon Rubin.
I mean, I thought you would be an asshole, and you're not.
Yeah. I'm friends with Alon Rubin. He played on the Paramore record that I toured the whole cycle and then did the live. I did the live at Red Rocks version.
That's you.
That's me. Yeah.
Cool.
Crazy.
Oh shit! You had a story that you were gonna tell me about.
Here we go.
Nails, and that's what I want.
I'm terrified of meeting him because Elon told me, I was like, "Is he cool?" Like, and he was like, "Yeah, he's cool. He's just kind of serious." And I'm like, "That's what scares me. It's because I'm so not serious. We did a lot of serious talking, but through the lens of we're friends and." We're in a room next to a shower at a sold out show. We're safe. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's like we're not on someone else's turf. So my Nine Inch Nails story and why I'm scared to meet him, even if he isn't an asshole. So there's a festival in New Orleans. It's my favorite festival. It's called Voodoo Fest. And it's just like by a fucking cemetery in this field. And there's a Ferris wheel and there's 75,000 people. And Paramore was direct support to Nine Inch Nails.
When you were playing for Paramore, and this was after you quit Under Oath.
After I quit Under Oath, and Elon Rubin had recorded the self-titled Paramore record that I ended up doing 4 years of touring on, and I played on the live version, and I have the platinum record for.
Yeah, it was
amazing. It was some of the best times of my life, and I'm glad I did it. As a drummer, it grew me up.
Yeah.
Like, 'cause I was always I've never played in any band but my own ever, never for anyone else. I've never played drums for any other band but Under Oath, right. My whole life.
Which is why, again, last night I was thinking about it. I was like, this motherfucker is a motherfucker from one band.
Right. But it was awesome for me, and thank you, but it was awesome for me to go and have to be really professional. First off, the way it started, I'll tell the way it started, then I'll tell the story. So the way it started is I was mowing my grass, and my ex-wife brings me the phone, and she goes, you're going to do this. And it was my manager, and he said, Paramore's drummer got injured. They had been through seven drummers between the original drummer, who's back now, and myself in the course of 3 years.
That's crazy.
Josh Freese was one of them.
Fuck yeah.
So, like, heavy drummers. And our drummer got hurt. We're going to the UK to start our headliner for our first headliner for our record in 5 days. Can you do it? And I said no, like, to Taylor, the music director. I was like, I don't know if I can pull it off, but I'll fly to Nashville and try. So that afternoon, they're like, we're going to meet you at your rehearsal space and pick up your drums. I'm like, what? A semi-truck meets me at my little, like, rehearsal space and picks up the cases and drums. And you see the cases still say Paramore on them. They pick up everything. They can pick up everything. And I fly in, and I'm thinking we're going to go to, like, one of the rehearsal spaces in Nashville. I fly in, and they're rehearsing at the arena for this tour.
Nice.
And we had 4 days, 21 songs. I slept on the floor.
Did you know any of them?
I knew Riot stuff, Misery Business.
That's where that would have been made.
But this is Alon stuff. You know, Alon is open-handed, starts, fills with his left hand. So I stayed awake for 5 days. So I smoked a pack of cigarettes a day at the time. in my borrowed friend's studio and slept on the ground. It was disgusting. And at the end, I pulled it off, and they flew me to England, and we went to Ireland. In the first show, there was 20,000 people there at the O2. The curtain dropped, and I just was there naked. So a couple months later, we're playing Voodoo Fest, which is my favorite festival. So I'm kind of getting comfortable, but I'm just now getting to where, like, I know these songs.
Yeah.
Right? And they tell me Alon's going to be here today with Nine Inch Nails. I'm like, and I was more nervous about that because, like, this motherfucker played the record, and I think he might be one of the best.
He's fucking amazing.
He's insane. And real shit. Plays the real shit. All the realest shit. He's also under, at the time, he still might be under 30. He's way younger than me. He's 7 years younger than me, and he's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Yeah, it's a whole thing. But
now I hate him.
Yeah, but he's also a sweet guy. So I'm nervous about him being there. And I know Nine Inch Nails is playing. And that night we go on. It's like 9:15. It's a late festival. And I look behind me, and Elon is standing there. And next to Elon is Trent fucking Reznor.
Just sat watching. Just
like, arms crossed.
Like a goth dad.
And it, you know that feeling when you're like on a roller coaster or somebody tells you your girl cheated on you or like something huge. Like,
yeah.
I'm not joking. The same feeling I had when
you
found out.
Pissed the bed and in a dream.
The same feeling I had when they told me my daughter had to be taken out by C-section. I got in that moment. Like, everything in my head and chest went to my asshole.
Yeah.
Like, and I was like, what do I do? And they stood there for like 7 songs, just bobbing their head.
Trent Reznor, Bobby Sparrow.
Yep.
That's fucking cool.
And then afterwards, Alon was like, ah, you did all right.
No way.
Yeah. He's like, you did pretty good, man.
You did pretty good. Fuck you. Yeah. I would have punched him.
No, I mean, he was so sweet. He didn't even mean it. Like, he just was like.
I was like, he meant it.
No, I mean, but I kind of prefaced it with like, I think I might have dropped this fill.
Oh, right.
You know, he was, and he's like, you did pretty good, man. Like,
pretty good.
Don't beat yourself up. But I was just like, fuck! Like,
pretty good as a six.
But there was another show that he saw where, thank God, Trent wasn't there. He's like, you crushed it. Like, a couple months later. Right. So, like, that was my Nine Inch Nails story. And that's why I don't want to meet Trent, because I'm so scared he'll be like, you're that dude that fucked up a lot.
And if Trent Reznor, no offense to you or Paramore, Trent Reznor remembers a festival.
Yeah, I don't know, dude.
That's sick as fuck.
Man. Yeah, it's wild.
On the live video that we were already talking about with all the lights, we would have probably been that tall. There's that clip from it where he's like, you're ready to have a good time? And everyone's like, yeah. And he says, that was the other guys. We're here to have a bad time. And then he starts fucking copy over copy. And it's so sick.
I watched them from front of house that night, and they opened with copy over copy. And it was, dude, copy of a copy is so sick with real drums. Because on the record, there's no real drums.
Yeah. With those lights as well.
With Elon, dude.
I love that record, though. We've had this chat. You don't like things without.
I like Hesitation Marks, but I think that, it, again, like what we talked about an hour ago, I think that there's a feeling of, like, it's fake shit, but somebody, like, finger drummed it.
I'll die on this hill. I think the song With Teeth is sexier than Closer. You know, because everyone.
I agree.
Because it's like a dirty. Closer's like quite a clean goth sex. It's like, I want to fuck you, like, okay, whatever. But With Teeth's like, with my teeth!
Like you might have done it in a bathroom of a venue.
Yeah, it's fucking.
Dude, horrendous. You posted a picture the other day of me in the crowd, like the only mosher that turned up or something. And you were playing the With Teeth beat that day.
Oh, yeah, that was that day.
And I can't figure out in my brain how to put it together. My body won't do it. I tried to do it in sound check the other day because it's kind of.
It's janky, like.
Yeah, it's like. And I was just. That guy, I don't know if this is true. The guy that played on that record is dead, I think. Like, on some of those songs. Not obviously not Dave Grohl and Josh Freese, but there's a guy that played live during all of With Teeth. There used to be a band called the Icarus Line. The guitar player during With Teeth was that guy, because Robin was gone. And there's a drummer, I don't know where he was from, I think his name was Aaron North. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think he's dead. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know, I'm gonna look. But yeah, that record, yeah, dude, so
speaking of death, you played a Foo Fighters cover yesterday, didn't you?
We did.
How much of a bum out is that?
Okay.
Are you gonna say no?
No. I
Growing up, I was growing up, I was never into the drummers. Like in the 90s, getting Modern Drummer and stuff, I was like, we talked about this a little bit in the beginning with you telling me that I was famous back in the day or whatever. Like, I don't.
You're still famous, bro.
shut up. I'm trying to articulate this. Like, I was never into like Carter Beaufort and Dave Weckl and Marco Miniman, and those guys are talented. Have more talent in one hand than I'll ever have in my whole life. I'll never be that good as a drummer ever. But those guys didn't speak to me. Like, being a kid and seeing the Foo Fighters on 120 Minutes at Night on MTV and seeing Nirvana, that spoke to me because it was violent. And Nirvana was the first band that I saw. Like, my dad was into like the Eagles and Zeppelin, and John Bonham is arguably the best drummer of all time, but you look at those guys like they're gods. When my dad would show me videos of the Stones playing, it's like, or the Who, like, those are gods. You can never do that. And then I saw Nirvana when I was 10 years old on television, and it was horrible. Like a mess. It sounded like shit. It was on an award show, but everyone was enamored by it. And so those drummers were the drummers that spoke to me. And Taylor, I loved because he came from playing on Jagged Little Pill for Alanis, and then he like slid into this Dave skin that was like violent and like not paradiddles. You know what I mean? It was like fucked. So he was I really believe on the upper echelon. He's like the last guy. He was the last guy. It was devastating.
It's fucking crazy. I've never been like a huge, I have like a running joke of like hating the Foo Fighters, but I don't actually hate the Foo Fighters. They're fucking the first probably four Foo Fighters records I fucking love.
They're perfect, yeah.
But I was a drum teacher for 10 years, and the minute the kids' parents see that I have tattoos, they would always go, oh, you know, we're into the heavy stuff too, like the Foos. And it would just be like, it became a joke where I just like tell people that I hate Foo Fighters, but obviously I don't. What I had on my fucking Instagram, because I make jokes about fucking everything, I had a number of kids after I posted an RIP thing who messaged me saying, oh, so not the most overrated band anymore, or stuff like that. Like, oh, because I don't like the music of a band anymore, I want the drummer to be dead. Like, are you fucking hearing yourself? I deleted it because of it. I was just like,
I saw you delete it. I was wondering if it was because people were. I mean, he was arguably, like, in my opinion, the only. Dave Grohl is my favorite drummer. Fact. He is the only.
He's incredible.
He was the only drummer that could play for Dave Grohl. Like, do you think that they'll keep going?
My first instinct was, well, just get Dave Grohl, but he's doing other stuff in the same band.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
I mean, how does it work? Like, I...
Alarm Rubin?
Yeah.
But fucking, I don't think, I don't know.
It's wild because, dude, bring it down one more notch on the downbeat.
Jesus Christ.
Think about fucking Dave losing Kurt and now this.
It's fucking horrible.
If I were him, I would just go home and stay for a while.
I don't think he can, though.
No, it's in him.
Yeah.
He's like, he's one of us. I'll tell my Dave Grohl story, then we can finish.
Yeah, Dave Grohl story.
It's fantastic.
I need your top five bands of all time.
Now. I'll do that. My Dave Grohl story is tragic. 2009, I've never met Dave Grohl, by the way. In 2009, I was flying back from New Zealand with Under Oath. My ex-wife was with me. And we were like, we were four rows behind Dave Grohl. Dave Grohl, and sitting next to him was John Paul Jones from Led Zeppelin.
No fucking
They were down there doing them Crooked Vultures with Josh Homme.
Oh, shit.
Led Zeppelin, Nirvana, and Foo Fighters. Like, that's my shit. She's like, just say something. They were like drinking wine. It's 14 hours. And I didn't say a word. And I was like, fuck, dude, I messed up. And you get to LAX, and at LAX, everyone has to collect their baggage before you can clear customs. They're like, from me to the wall. And my ex-wife's like, you should say something. Fuck, I can't.
You're like me.
I can't.
You can't do it.
It gets so much worse.
Oh, no.
We leave. I'm kicking myself for a few days. 2 weeks later, we have a flyout, and Spencer, the singer for Under Oath, was in L.A. doing some press or whatever, and Dave Grohl was in the airport, and they both had a layover or whatever, and Spencer went up to Dave and was like, I know this sucks, but, like, I just want to tell you how much you've helped me through so much shit and inspired me, and he goes, come on, man. Let me buy you a coffee.
These are the sort of things that I've heard.
And he sat with Dave Grohl for an hour, and Dave Grohl had heard of Under Oath and the whole fucking thing.
and they switched.
You could have been getting drunk on a plane.
And they switched to beer. And the whole fucking thing.
That's such a cool
and
story.
Dave paid the bill. The Dave paid the fucking bill, and it was a thing, and I'm still pissed. It was 15 years ago.
You just fucking dropped your
2009, dude. That's the kind of shit that I do, because I'm too pussy to be like, hey, man. Yeah, and even if he was an asshole, though, at least I could say it.
Yeah. I've never been in the presence of someone that I truly would like to speak to. Trent Reznor probably would.
You think you'd do it?
Fuck yeah. Because I want to know. And does actually, I know he probably cares so little about me.
Does it matter? What happens if he's a dick?
Trent Reznor, who gives a fuck?
Oh, I'm going to tell Chris a story. Our keyboard player, Chris, is like favorite band is Pantera.
Ooh.
And you like Pantera?
I mean, love them. And now I'm like...
Ugh, it's crazy. Yeah. This is also like 15 years ago. We were in Australia. And one of Phil Anselmo's, the singer's bands, I don't know if it was Down or... I don't know what it was. He had two bands, didn't he?
Yeah.
After Pantera. I can't remember.
Superjoint Ritual and Down.
I think it might have been Superjoint, but yeah. My old drum tech and Chris, who are massive fans, are in the lobby of the hotel, and they see Phil walk in. And Chris, who is like the most jolly... he's like the best human. He's like, Phil, like, can I get a picture? And Phil goes... And this is how I would want to meet Phil Anselmo. Goes... Puts his hand up, save it for the show, brother. Which I think is, that's a bad meeting of a hero, but it's also fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Like, if that's how you met Phil Anselmo, save it for the show, brother.
That's fucking
it's
funny.
It's so sick, dude. So sick.
Guy sucks, though. He should have taken
yeah, he does
suck. I've got one plane story. I wasn't even fucking there for it, but your plane story just reminded me.
Go.
Have you ever heard Sam Architect's plane story?
No.
Soundwave Festival. You know, like you fucking fly.
Yeah,
all
yeah,
the
yeah,
bands
yeah,
are
yeah.
On the flights because everyone's just flying.
It's like festival. It's like the it's like download. I mean, it's like Soundwave used
yeah.
to be. Yeah.
It's Soundwave. So, Architects are on a plane.
Yeah,
and Korn are further up the plane. And over the fucking intercom thing, obviously, they're like, you know, cabin crew. Check seats ready for boarding or whatever, ready for takeoff. And Sam Carter goes, are you ready? Really at Korn. And the rest of the plane like explodes.
Laughing.
For fucking Korn.
Oh, we did a 9-week tour with Korn. I never met Jonathan Davis. Not once. Or Fieldy.
He's too busy getting fucking oxygen.
Never met the two of them. Never met him. The drummer, so sweet. Head and monkey, the best. The bass player and the singer never fucking...
Someone looks a bit like Trent Reznor.
He does.
By that,
I mean he looks like someone's buff dad. That'll do it.
Over 40?
Top 5 bands, because I'm going to take your... I've got to sound check, and I don't...
I'm going to go have beer.
Nice. Top
yeah.
5 bands of all time, or artists.
Oh, mine's fucked, dude. It's really bad. Like
we need to do a part 2, because there's so much I want to talk about.
This is so fun, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, man.
Thank
this is
you.
So killer.
We should have done it earlier on.
We looked so forward to doing this, and I'm glad we did it today because
yeah.
It's been perfect.
Fucking
with you hungover and the whole thing. The last day of the tour, wrapping it up. Thank you for coming on the tour again. It was so.
It's
my favorite tour we've ever done.
I'm honestly exactly the same.
Yeah.
I'm going to be sad afterwards.
Same. In no particular order, top 5 would be Nine Inch Nails,
yeah.
Metallica.
Yeah, we're the same fucking human.
Yeah. Yep.
Favorite Metallica album. Rank me 5 in a row, Metallica.
I don't know if I can do that. Do they have to be in order?
Yes.
That's the problem. The Black Album.
I knew that was going to be your number 1.
And Justice for All. You're going to hate the next 2. You're not going to believe what I'm about to say.
By the look of your NASCAR t-shirt.
Load and Reload.
Yeah. Both of them in your top 5.
Yes.
See, I
mate, you want to hear what my number 5 is? You're gonna be so mad. S&M.
You. Oh no, S&M's fucking amazing.
That's my top 5.
We did S&M the other day. Me and when Drew was driving our bandwagon to Canada, and I realised that Load and Reload are fucking great. And if you took any of the songs from Load and Reload and you put them on the Black Album, they would have.
Do you want to know why I like Load? It's so stupid. When I was a kid and they put out the video for what was the first single on Load?
Oh, the spooky video. The video that's got
No, the one where on the cliff. and Kirk has, I can't remember what fucking the name of the song is. I know the song. I'm not going to sing it on your podcast. But Kirk is on the edge of this cliff, and he has a brown jacket on. It's the first time I ever saw Metallica without anything that wasn't, like, dark and black.
Yeah.
And he's playing a blue Strat, like a relic blue Strat, not an ESP,
yeah,
with, like, a ice pick headstock. And I was like, that's the coolest thing I've ever seen. That's a heavy band.
Playing a Strat?
Yeah. So, Nine Inch Nails, Metallica. And Metallica is also a family thing. Like, I don't listen to Metallica very often anymore. It just comes from when I was a kid on the weekends. My uncle, my ex-uncle, my cousin's dad that got divorced from my aunt's dad would pick us all up. My dad wasn't around. He'd pick us all up and take us to, like, go-karts and shit, and he always played Load and Reload. That's how I got into Metallica. Anyway. Number three would be the Stones. This is not in order.
So rocking.
It's pretty rock. Yeah.
I like it.
Because the Stones is a blues band that's, like, really unhinged, and they learned how to play growing up together, which I feel has a lot of parallels to our band. Obviously, we're an eighth iota of the size of the Stones, so I'm not comparing Under Oath to the Stones, but... and then Johnny Cash.
Do you want to know one little bit of information about the Stones?
Go.
They are the human beings on the planet that have been seen in the flesh by the most other human beings on Earth.
Whoa. That's true.
Because of the amount of shows and how big their shows are.
And they're
they
still
have
going.
Been seen in the flesh by more people than anyone else.
I do think it's fucking weird that Charlie dies and they just keep trucking. But the next week.
Ever. It'd be like the Marvel Universe.
Like the next week.
They just fucking come back.
Like the next week. They go on this stadium tour. So that's, is that three?
I think it's four.
I said Johnny Cash. So Johnny Cash to me is the embodiment of feeling and of violence to me. I grew up on mostly country music. My mom toured in a Southern gospel band, like Christian country music, my whole life. So Johnny Cash to me is like the embodiment of like the feeling that I want to feel when I listen and play music where it's like barely on the rails.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You can hear all of the pain.
Yeah. And then number five for me, and I say this with trepidation, but this is the artist out of the list that I listen to the most still, is Third Eye Blind.
American people love it so much.
I know.
You know how many times this has come up on the podcast?
I know.
And I've got nothing for you.
And I know that people hate Stephen Jenkins.
I don't even know who he is.
He's the singer of Third Eye Blind. And I've never met the guy, know nothing about him. There's all these rumors that he's a dick and that he can't sing, and I don't care. Like,
it's one of the only bands where I truly think the ocean between the UK...
Like Third Eye Blind doesn't travel the pond?
Doesn't travel.
There's something about that first Third Eye Blind record where much like, you know, the 80s and the whole thing, they came along and did this thing that was vital and real, and it hit me at just the right time. There's a song called Graduate and a song called Jumper. I was in high school. I was acquaintances with a few people that had committed suicide, and then I was graduating high school, and it was just those two things. Those two songs, a song called Jumper and a song called Graduate, and I listen to every record after religiously, and I still do. Out of that whole...
So does everyone in my band.
Out of that whole list, that's the band I listen to the most. I, before the world shut down, the last concert I saw, my wife and I went to... This is right before she got pregnant. We went to Third Eye Blind and Jimmy World co-headliner, and we drank bottles of wine. It was the best show I've ever been to.
And I can't fucking relate because I don't give a shit.
I'm
glad you are.
And you wouldn't give a shit. You wouldn't, and you shouldn't.
It just seems, it sounds so American to me, and like, it just seems like I just can't.
There's UK bands like that.
Yeah, I know.
But what's the UK band that has the strangest name? I love the band so much.
The Sleaford Mods.
Catfish and the Bottlemen.
Band's fucking sick.
Amazing. No one cares but me in America.
No one cares over here, but they're pretty big back
They're home. Huge back home. But like that latest record with that song Seven on it is incredible.
Because there's fucking sadness in there.
So is there in Third Eye Blind? You don't like Third Eye Blind. Fuck you.
I don't care.
Love you.
Sorry. I need to sound check. You're the best.
You're the best.
My new friend, Aaron.
Yep. Dear friend.
Thank you so
Thanks,
much.
Thanks, Craig.
Official handshake.
Thank you, buddy.